When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Music Buzz Podcast. The Music Buzz Podcast features candid discussions with and about those behind the scenes in the music business, including industry veterans representing the segments of musician, design, and live. All three Music Buzz podcast hosts have spent their careers working with the biggest names in entertainment and have been and are still a fly on the wall. Dane Clark as the drummer for John Mellencamp's band for over 20 years and various solo projects. Hugh Syme, a world-renowned graphic artist with the biggest names in music and the corporate world. Andy Wilson, an award-winning marketing and public relations executive with over 20 years of combined multi-level entertainment industry experience in the music and sports business. Now let's buzz.
Hello and welcome back to the Music Buzz Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Andy Wilson, along with Dane Clark. Hey, Dane.
Hi, Andy.
And also Hugh Syme. Hey, Hugh.
Hey, Andrew.
Today we welcome to the Music Buzz guitarist Michael Wilton, founding member of Queensryche. Michael is known as Whip for his undeniable speed playing the guitar, though he started on bass many moons ago. Queensryche released its 16th album, Digital Noise Alliance, in 2022. And continues to blaze a trail in both the studio and on the road. So welcome to the Music Buzz, Michael Wilton.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
Congrats on the Digital Noise Alliance project. It's very cool. Got to check it out yesterday. Fans of progressive metal and hard rock in general absolutely love this record. Well-written songs. Man, stunning instrumental work and vocal performances from you guys. And the new guy on drums, Casey Grillo. It's his first recording with you guys, right? Though he's played with you for a while. He's kicking some ass on there. Hats off to him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this album came out in last October, so we've been just promoting the hell out of it, you know, and fortunately, we were on the Judas Priest tour, and then, you know, I've been doing some one-offs, and now we're on the Digital Noise Alliance tour.
I read somewhere that you had a collection of old Marshall amps that you used on this project. Can you tell us about the combination of guitars and amps? And because the guitar sounds are great on this record, man. Because I've got a studio, Thunder Sound Studio, in my home, which is supplied by Sweetwater, by the way. A little plug for those guys. Maybe I'll get some more money off my next order.
As is mine, my studio too. Everything in my room here is from Sweetwater.
Tell me about your guitar tones.
Yeah, this album, you know, our producer, Zeus, he said, hey, Michael, you still have all those old Marshalls you used to record with? I go, yeah, they're in the closet in my house. So, why, you want to resurrect those? He goes, yeah, let's do it. So I brought, I think, six of them, you know, from different albums and, you know, ranging from, you know, old 50 watts to French 50 watts. 100 watt JCM 800s, 100 watt JCM 800s, which I actually got from Jim Marshall back in 1984 when we were at their factory over in England. So I've, you know, as they get a little older, you got to, you know, change out the capacitors because they dry out. So they've all been recapped over the years, and so glorious to turn those on and just hear them. It was just, you know, everybody was just salivating. It was like, yeah, you know. And
why were they in the closet?
They're big. They take up a lot of space. So it's, you know, they're hidden there. And I'll pull one out once in a while to turn it on and play through it. But, yeah, it was an arsenal, you know. And he said, bring all your effects. You know, I have some oldies, you know, the ADA flanger, which we used back on the EP back in 1982. And that that little flanger has made its way on every Queensryche album. It's like it's got the weirdest power supply to it, and it's, you know, it just gives it that clean, you know, Lady Wore Black chorusing flanging effect. It's great.
Is this your only album with Zeus as producer?
No, he's been on the last three albums. So
he's no slouch.
No, he's great. You know, he's the, you know, the final voice on things that, as far as decisions to be made, and just a great guy. He makes you feel comfortable, and he, you know, he manages to push you just enough to get the best performances out. Yeah. You know, and he's a cool guy to hang out with as well.
That helps as a producer for sure. Yeah. Be able to get along with the guy, right?
Hey. Right.
So what guitars were you mixing with these Marshalls?
Various ESPs, a couple of Les Pauls that I have, a couple Strats, you know, just whatever the song needed. Brought some acoustics into it. I have my Taylor, I forgot the model of it. I think it's like an 810 or something like that. Yeah. So, and then my 12 string. I mean, it's just, we just kind of improvised everything. This album was after the pandemic. You know, we had a meeting after it was safe to travel, and we decided let's make this a really special album and do it differently. You know, let's kind of bring back the magic of the early 80s when, you know, me and DeGarmo would get in a room and just start riffing with each other and building songs that way and having everybody else come in and write the song. So this album was, there was no outside material, old demos or anything. This was all improvised from the ground up. So, and with everybody in the room, you know, it's magic because everybody gives you a thumbs up or a thumbs down or not sure, you know, and then you proceed. There's no waiting for an email to come back or did you listen to it or, you know, it's none of that stuff. And it just expedited the whole recording process. I mean, it's fun and it's like, you know, but now, you know, back then, you know, you didn't have the internet, you didn't have cell phones, and we were young and we couldn't afford a computer. So, you know, now it's kind of like that, but we can afford a computer, which is great because If I have an idea that just flies out of my head, you know, Zeus is there to capture it because most likely, you know, I'm no spring chicken, right? But that riff probably just went into collective consciousness and there's no way for me to retrieve it.
Being together as a band is so much more organic, and that's something that usually younger bands, before the rigors of the road and the schedules of the record companies demanding a new album in 22 months, the fact that you were in the same room is, you know, unfortunately, a lot of bands fly their parts into each other now because of computers, and they end up kind of making the album from remote locations.
It works, and you can come out with great stuff, and it's just, I think it just takes longer. I think it takes longer. So, but yeah, I mean, and you know, when we were in pre-production, you know, we were up to like 22 solid ideas. And that's when Zeus just said, "Hey guys, we got to stop, do 11 tunes and concentrate on them. And let's get the recording going." We recorded the drums in Hulk Hogan's old mansion in Florida.
What? Tell us more about that.
I don't know. 16,000 square feet. It's massive. And they had this massive living room with asymmetrical walls and kind of a dome ceiling. And Zeus goes, "Let's do the drums here. This is perfect." So we built, you know, the studio there and put the recording equipment in there, all the cables and everything. And, you know, we tracked the drums, and that's a one of a kind drum track sound. I mean, it is, that came out of Hulk Hogan's mansion's
It's a big sound. It is a nice sounding drum sound for sure.
Did you guys have like an urge to rip your shirts off and stuff when you were recording?
Oh yeah. I mean, and jump in the water. Yeah. It's like,
so how did you end up in Hulk Hogan's former house? I mean, is it a studio now or what's the story? How'd you end up there?
No. It's his old house. I don't know if you watched MTV or VH1 back in the day, they did something with it. Okay. You can check and see all the pictures on that, but it's someone else bought it, right? Because he sold it a while ago. And then Todd Latore, our singer, knows the people that bought it. So they said, well, yeah, we'll let you borrow it for a month. So
that's
they were
really
so
cool.
Gracious. Yeah, it was a blast.
Todd singing his butt off on this record too, man.
So yeah, I mean, you know, all in all, I mean, this was a really special recording for us. And, you know, when you're doing this, it's like everything is subjective, right? You don't know how the fans are going to react to any of your music, and it's like, and all you got to do is just believe in what you're doing. Fortunately, the way we wrote these songs and everything, it's connected with the fans so well, and it's like they're demanding, you know, to hear songs off Digital Noise Alliance live, you know. So
the song that hit me the most, because it's just melodically I enjoyed it, it's probably the least heavy tune on there, but the song called Forest, it sounds like David Bowie wrote it the same day he wrote Space Oddity. It's a great tune, and I love the chord, the Beatley chords and everything. You guys playing that one live? It's just a question.
Yeah, we are, and the fans love it, you know. That's one of the last songs that we put together. I had that slight arrangement, and then we rebuilt it and, you know, added a Mellotron and a little piano in there, and then just kind of made it a really special song. That's a great one, and it works great live.
Rebel Yell was an even better version, too. I thought that sounded amazing.
Yeah, and that's, you know, everybody's going, why the hell did you put a Billy Idol song on the CD? And it's like they don't know, you know, our record company, Century Media Records, always asks for a bonus track. We've always given them a bonus track, whether it's a live version of a song or acoustic version of a song. So we decided, hey, you know, everybody's doing cover songs these days, let's do one. So we had The Cult, She Sells Sanctuary, ready to go, and we had Rebel Yell by Billy Idol, and Todd felt the most comfortable singing the Billy Idol song. So anyway, that was supposed to be a bonus track. Well, the CD and the album comes out, and the record company put that on the album and put another song as a bonus track. So that's kind of what happened.
It's a great version.
Yeah, it's cool.
I'd love to hear the Cult cover too. You guys can put that
nice.
Is that done? Did you finish it?
No, we didn't finish it.
Next time around, maybe.
So are you shopping? Are you shopping today, Michael?
Yeah, one of my guilty pleasures. Yeah, I'm gonna throw down some equipment here at Sweetwater.
Well, tell them you're doing a podcast with us, and we're all talking about how great their story is. So maybe you can get an extra special discount.
I mean, I don't know. I've never been here, and this place is massive.
Oh man, you've never been there.
They have a barber. They have a putt thing. Yeah, it's pretty wild.
They've got a slide too. You can go down the slide inside too.
It's scary how big it is, you know, and how many buildings they occupy. It's just amazing.
One thing we always cover on the podcast, of course, with Hugh on board is album covers and artwork. And a lot of our guests, you know, Hugh's worked with, and a lot of them he hasn't. And so we like to go through that. But obviously with you guys, we were counting before we jumped on with you, Michael, and Hugh, I think, has worked on five covers for Queensryche over the years. And
want
to talk about those a little bit and tell some stories in that regard.
Yeah, Hugh has been a part of Queensryche's history for many album covers. And I mean, it's always great, you know, when you have such a renowned artist bless and design your album cover. So, you know, hats off to you, Hugh.
Thank you. Well, it's been a pleasure working with you guys, too. Now, the truth is, you and I met twice when I flew out to the was a Little Log, or what's it called?
Big Log.
That's you, they call Little Log, Hugh, don't you? But I don't know. Hey, all right.
I got a really bad connection. But the day we flew out, there was some the wings were icing on Chris's plane. So, and it was great to be out there and watching you guys work, watching you guys developing music, you know, in the room. That was cool. And then we did a photo session, I think, in Seattle at, sometime thereafter.
And when we were at Big Log, did you come down to the local bar at the ferry terminal with us ever?
No.
There was an interesting character that came there a lot. This guy lived in a tree and he was married to a llama.
Okay.
Right.
And his llama would be outside the bar and he'd come in and have a drink with us.
Como se llama, llama? I don't know, man.
I don't know. How do you tell their gender? I don't know. I didn't get close enough.
I wish we had done that. Would have been good. I think I was there for just overnight, one night. Some bands will drag you off to their locals. I worked in London with Iron Maiden years ago, and the nightly event was to look at the progress of the artwork and then to drink and drink and drink.
Yes. We've had some fun times with the Iron Maiden boys as well.
No doubt. No. Man. So artwork-wise, I mean, I don't remember who I was responding to be honest with you, when I was doing the covers. A lot of the times I'll get a good title and I'll just blurt out an idea. Someone will say, that sounds great. And then I go away. I disappear for 6 weeks. But when it comes to artwork, how involved are you? How hands-on are you?
Yeah, on this album, it was, we kind of had the blueprint with the name of the album, which was Digital Noise Alliance, which was DNA. So we wanted to, put a DNA molecule.
It's clever. It's very good.
Build that somehow into our symbol, the Tri-Reich. And we just went from there, and we just kept seeing different versions of it through the record company. And when it was finally done, we were really happy. And it's on our t-shirts that we're selling on our tour right now. And it's the biggest selling item we have.
So where'd the name come from? I mean, I'm sure it's documented somewhere, but I never even asked. I don't know. So
back in 1982, Chris DeGarmo wrote a song called Queen of the Reich. And before we were Queensryche, we were called The Mob. And we were going to call the project The Mob, but the people who were managing us at the time said that that name was taken. So we have to come up with something different. And so, yeah, I think Chris had a dream or a nightmare about this woman. And we just kind of took it out of the song, The Queen of the Reich, and came up with Queensryche. And that kind of fit because, we were young and goes, oh, this looks really cool. Let's put some omelets on it.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. How many people in the world ever thought you were from Germany?
We're constantly explaining the pronunciation of our name in other countries, and they say, well, you have the two omelets on it. It's Queensryche. That's something that, it's just been with us forever and we're always explaining it.
You mentioned some of the bands you've toured with over the years, obviously Judas Priest, you said Iron Maiden, et cetera. So what are some of the bands you've toured with, in your past? You're kind of like, I can't believe I'm actually on tour with these guys. Obviously we all start out as fans. So, any of those from your live experience over the years?
I mean, just being able to, be on the same bill with Judas Priest is amazing. I got to pinch myself. I grew up listening to these guys, same with Iron Maiden. I was into the two guitar, metal guys and, the harmonies and all that. So, we've toured with so many bands. I mean, Dio, Metallica, AC/DC, Def Leppard, Bon Jovi, even, Quiet Riot, Twisted Sister, and that's just a few.
And what was the first concert you went to as a fan?
I think my dad took me to a show in the Seattle Center Coliseum, and I think it was Creedence Clearwater Revival. I don't know how old I was. I don't remember it, but I know I went to it.
So what about the first show you went to that you paid to go to that you were like pumped to see?
I think it was Black Sabbath with Van Halen opening.
Oh, nice.
You
saw that tour.
It was the Never Say Die tour.
Yeah, their old manager, Noel Monk, wrote a book, and he talked about that tour. Van Halen, everybody talked about that tour as Van Halen came out and kind of blew Black Sabbath off the stage. Is that what you remember at that time?
Yeah, I saw that performance, and it made me, take up guitar, basically, as a full-time thing. Yeah, Van Halen was a big influence on me.
And you started off, I referenced it at the beginning of the show, you started off playing bass, and then you, somewhere, you put the bass behind and moved on to guitar. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, in junior high, I was in, you know, various garage bands, and I was playing bass with some friends and just jamming and stuff. But then, you know, I got to the point where the next band that I was in had a bass player. So I just picked up the guitar and started learning. It was all kind of pretty much self-taught, you know, by ear. And when you're that young, you know, you're a sponge and you just absorb everything. So I think that's, you know, that's kind of, it was my calling to become a guitar player.
And then as far as the beginnings of the band, I read a little bit, I think, on your website about it. Can you talk about just how Queensryche was formed? Because I know you were there at the beginning.
Right. It was, me, Chris, and Eddie, and Scott, we'd meet at these keggers out where Microsoft is right now in Redmond, Washington, before Microsoft came out, you know. So it'd be like, just like in the movies, cars with headlights on, and in the middle was a big keg, and everybody was drinking there. And that's where I met the guys, and I think we decided to jam. So we were all working day jobs, and we decided to go into Triad Studios, which was back in Redmond, Washington, and record Graveyard Hours. So, because it was cheaper. So, and then at that point, you know, we had four songs written, and the vocalist we had at the time wasn't working out, and that's when we got Jeff involved, and he came in and sang on our demo tape, which eventually we gave to this couple at a record store called Easy Street Records, which is in Seattle, and they liked it so much they backed us, and they pressed, I think, 60,000 copies, and you know, we sold out, like, you know, pretty quickly, due to the fact that we got this awesome review in Kerrang magazine, which is a British magazine, in the Armed and Ready section of the magazine. So here we are, you know, 19, 20 years old. And then the local radio station played one of our songs on the radio, and we're telling our bosses, "Hey, that's us." And they're going, "That's not you. That's not you. That's not, that sounds like some British band or some, you know." So it was like, you know, once that happened, you know, it just, our first show was playing at the Paramount in Seattle and Portland.
I just played both of those places. Great, great halls.
With we opened up for Zebra, and those were our first two gigs. So we never played any
Zebra. Yeah. I don't recall that band.
Yeah, Randy Jackson and Zebra. Come on now.
Oh, I guess they really had their stripes, huh?
Mm-hmm. Hey, yeah, they were big there for a minute. Yeah, I remember them.
That's a horse of a different color.
Wise and guys.
And the comedy tower is collapsing.
Oh, no kidding. Boom! It just smashed to the ground.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that, Michael. It's important to call him out.
They have my gear in Sweetwater, and they want me to go pay for it. So.
Oh, imagine that. All right.
Funny how that works.
Thank you for joining us, Michael. We appreciate it.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.